Well, let's go into the next level down, and this is where things get difficult. The first thing we have to ask is, has your dog actually got a separation anxiety? And these two photos describe what the separation anxiety is all about. You're at work, stressed to the hilt because you've got work pressures. In the morning, you're panicking trying to get to work on time, worried about the deadlines that are facing you at work, and you're really distressed at leaving time. The dog says, Dad, Mum, why are you distressed when I'm leaving? If you're distressed, I'm distressed too. I'm feeding off your anxiety. Dogs certainly do that. So this is the worst scenario. If you're stressed at work, dog's stressed at home, who's going to win out of that one? With separation anxiety, there are three components which would generally say, yes, we think your dog's got a separation anxiety. The first one is that there's an obvious emotion when you're preparing to leave. The next one is there's a problem while you're gone during the day, the 8-hour day. And the next one is there's a problem when you arrive. These are the three hallmarks which would lead us to say this may well be a separation anxiety. Going through these, the emotion when you leave, at leaving time, when you're going out the door, rattling of the keys, closing the windows, you often get shadowing and trembling. The dog follows you around the house. Many of my clients say, I can't even close the door of the loo without my dog getting upset. The dog has to be inside the loo with me, sitting on the lap. And you'd be surprised at how many people say that to me. Excessive panting, lip licking, and sometimes drooling, all signs of anxiety. Panting actually is a fairly high level sign. It's hyperventilation, the dog taking a huge amount of oxygen because it's feeling distressed. It's actually the beginning of the flight-fight response. The lip licking is a sign of anxiety as well, probably linked to the higher gut passage we have of food when we're anxious. And the drooling is probably related to that nauseous feeling when you're feeling anxious as well. Reclusiveness. Some dogs hide under the bed or hide under the table saying, don't put me outside, don't put me outside, I'm going to panic, I'm going to panic. And the morose look to the face that I'm sure you've all seen. They turn on the brown-eyed look saying, oh, please don't leave me, little devils. And whining, barking or howling as you're walking off to the bus, you can hear the dog squeaking and yelling. And if you've got your mobile phone with the automatic answer, you're listening to this as you're driving off or you're in the bus. Then there's a problem while you're gone, which is obviously the barking, howling, screaming, the destructive behaviours, householding and escaping, and sometimes the self-mutilation, all those things we've been through. And then a problem when you arrive, you know what I'm going to say here, ballistic attention seeking. The word ballistic is what my clients say to me, so I'm giving that back to you. Now, if you've got all of that, and if it's been going on for some time, we'd say that would be a separation anxiety. Do you notice the clock just timing 9 o'clock? If the recorder's on, it would have recorded that. You've got to be careful, though, because sometimes these are also seen in other conditions as well. If you just take a dog into a new home, move in on a weekend and go to work on Monday, very likely the dog is going to show all of that. So what the heck, you're leaving me in this jail, I've never been here before. That's not really separation anxiety. That's a failure of assimilation into a new home, which is often a lot easier to get over than a full-blown separation anxiety for an animal to learn. We'll talk about that in a short tip. But before we go into this, let's just look at this word anxiety. What is an anxiety? What does that actually mean? And it's important that you know this because anxiety is actually quite a confusing term. And anxiety is usually defined as the prediction of a bad event approaching, the prediction of doom. And typically the sad-looking dog saying, oh, what's going to happen when Mum and Dad go out the door? This sad look to the face is what we look at. So the prediction of doom. Very interesting word when we look at it. Just to confirm this a bit more, fear, how does that differ? Fear is different. It's the body's reaction to a sudden stressful event. Let's give you an example. If I picked on Brett, and I said, hey, Brett, the Q1 building on the Gold Coast, you know that big tall building? I said, hey, mate, views from up there. Let's go up to the top of Q1. So Brett says, oh, yeah, I'd love to look at this view. So we go up, and when we're on the whatever floor it is, I don't know how many floors, 100 floors, and I've never been up there, so I don't know what it looks like, but I'm visualising there's a balcony with a little railing. And Brett and I are looking over the edge. And because I'm a mean thing, I go, and I push him toward the edge and pull him back again. And Brett goes, oh, God, He takes a big breath and he pushes back. Maybe thumps me in the chest because of what I did and runs back to the lift, gasping for breath and running away, feeling nauseous, feeling sick, feeling awful. Is that anxiety? No, it's not. That's fear. That's the body's response to something terrifying, which I've just done to Brett by pretending to throw him off the edge. So I say, oh, Brett, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that. That's really bad news. So Brett and I go down below. Next day, I say, Brett, look, I'm sorry, mate, I shouldn't have done that. But the view was great. I want to take some photos. Would you come up with me again? He says, oh, look, Cam, you do that to me again, mate, and I'm not going to come up there. No, look, I promise I won't. There was a wrong thing for me to do. Maybe I can persuade Brett to get into the lift. But as we're going up, and Brett's seeing the floors trickle off, and puts that lurch of the lift, Brett goes, he takes the breath, and he starts to get a few palpitations and beads of sweat. And as we're up to the 50th floor, he gets worse and worse and worse. Then he says, Cam, I can't do it, I can't do it. And he presses all the buttons, and he jumps out of the lift. Is that fear? No, that's anxiety. It's a learnt response. He says, gosh, when I was up on the top of that building, that was so scary, and my body is telling me the same thing's going to happen again. So anxiety, in this case, is learnt by Brett. Maybe Brett's got a wimpy personality and is genetically coded to it. Sorry, Brett. But maybe he doesn't trust me, but it's all a matter of learning. So you look at the softer anxieties where we always do the same things, you know, the shaggy beasts, and then we go through all that regimentation of life as we go through the getting out of the door procedure at 7 or 7.30, and the dog's looking at all this sequence of events. That's how they learn the separation anxiety bit, which is important for the no-bore dog's routine, because what we're going to do is add food into that group in a moment, especially when we get out of the house, so the dog has a different reason for looking at us. That's why we did the no-bore dog's routine. Yeah, that's right. Go, disappear, get lost, he says. So anxiety and fear are different. Now, the thing with anxiety, a lot of people don't realise this, anxiety can be learned, and that's called an exogenous anxiety, comes from outside the body. So Brett, being taken up to the top of the Q1 building, learns anxiety of that particular building because of a horrific event. If we're driving through an intersection, we have a serious collision. When you go through that intersection again, you may predict that the same thing will occur, and you get uneasy when you're going through that intersection. Of course, we know things like post-traumatic distress syndrome of guys in the war and children suffering horrible abuse. In the same scenario, they start to panic. So that's an exogenous anxiety, which is learned from bad experiences. But then we have sometimes these inherent anxieties, which are part of a pet's makeup or part of a human being's makeup. And they're called endogenous anxieties, where the human or animal doesn't have a head that works properly. And indeed, they're just like somebody with type 1 diabetes, where they just can't be normal unless they're given insulin on a several times a day basis. Some animals just can't be normal unless they're given medications which stabilise the neurotransmitters in the head, particularly those which enhance the levels of serotonin, which is generally a calming endorphin, which makes us feel content. So these endogenous anxieties, these animals can't be normal, and medication is often essential for these dogs. Solutions for separation anxiety grow from the no-bore dog's routine. They start with a trial separations technique, which I'm now going to describe to you, and then they progress through the stage leaving process. So let's look at the trial separations technique. With this technique, what happens here is you separate yourself from your dog when you are home, when you don't have to leave. But mathematically, you do it as often as you can for short periods which become longer. E.g., normal activities, and the best example I can give you is vacuuming the house. The vacuum is a noisy, damn, smoking, belching, smelly, horrible thing. And the dog says, gee, I don't really like that. It's a great reason to put your pooch out on the deck or down on the laundry where it's going to be when you're not there or wherever you would like it to be when you're not home and dum-da-da-dum-da-da-dum, give it a carton of magic or a Kong toy or something which is going to be exactly what you're going to be doing when you leave the dog at 7 o'clock in the morning. So you start this process, but for a good reason such as vacuuming. The dog knows what the vacuum is. He says, sure, I don't mind being away from you when you're vacuuming because I don't like it anyway. Other examples would be if you're showering. Mate, I'm just going to the shower. Here, have a milk carton with a bit of food in it. I'm going to have a 5-minute shower and I'll close the door on you and hopefully you'll be okay while I'm in the shower. So it's not complex for you to do that because it's things you have to do on a day-to-day basis either. Lying down reading a book. You lie down on the bed and you put a baby gate up at the bedroom door so the dog can see you. But because you're relaxing, the dog says, oh, whew, it's not so bad after all. This little bit of a separation from mum or dad, I can tolerate that. And even sitting in a book watching TV, this is where we often use crates or the kennel cabs. You're sitting down watching TV, put the dog in a crate, which is just beside the chair, and that crate can always be moved further and further away as the dog gets used to that. But give the dog something to do in the crate to make it happy about that separation. A very important process. This progresses to the stage leaving technique, which is where you actually start to move out of the house.